namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Okay, so it is 12. So we shall read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena, text 12. Binasya Lingasya Kula Pravaho Dravya Priya Karaka Chaitanatmana Drishtaso Sambhatso Vipatso Surayo Na Vikriyante Mai Badha Sorida Vinasya Lingasya Guna Prabaho Dravya Kriya Karaka Chaitanatmana Drishtasu Sambhatsu Vipatsu Surayo Navikriyante Mai Bhadda Sorita Vinasya Lingasya Guna Pravaho Dravya Kriya Karaka Chaitanatmana Drishtasu Sampatsu Vipatsu Surayo Navikriyante Mai Bhadda Sorida Vinasya Lingasya Guna Pravaho Dravya Kriya Karaka Chaitanatmana Drishtasu Sampatsu Vipatsu Surayo Navikriyante Mai Bhadda Sorida Vinasya Different Lingasya Of the body Guna Of the three modes of material nature Prabaha Constant change. Dravya, physical elements. Kriya, activities of the senses. Karaka, demigods. Chaitana, and the mind. Atmana, consisting of. Drishtasu, when experienced, Sambhatsu, happiness, Vipatso, distress. Suraya, those who are advanced in knowledge. Na, never. Vikriyante, become disturbed. Mayi, unto me. Badha solida, bound in friendship. Translation. Lord Vishnu told King Prithu, my dear king, the constant change of this material world is due to the interaction of the three modes of material nature. The five elements, the senses, the demigods who control the senses, as well as the mind, which is agitated by the spirit soul. All these taken together comprise the body. Since the spirit soul is completely different from this combination of gross and subtle material elements, my devotee, who is connected with me in intense friendship and affection, being completely in knowledge, is never agitated by material happiness and distress. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The question may be raised that if the living entity has to act as the superintendent of the activities of the bodily combination, then how can he be indifferent to the activities of the body? The answer is given here. These activities are completely different from the activities of the spirit soul of the living entity. A crude example can be given in this connection. A businessman riding in a motor car sits in the car, supervises its running, and advises the driver. He knows how much gasoline is used up, and he knows everything about the car, but still he is apart from the car and is more concerned with his business. Even while riding in the car, he thinks of his business and his office. He has no connection with the car, although he is sitting there. As the businessman is always absorbed in thoughts of his business, so the living entity can be absorbed in thoughts of rendering loving service to the Lord. Then it will be possible to remain separate from the activities of the material body. This position of neutrality can be possible only for a devotee. The word Vadha Solida, bound in friendship, is particularly used here. Karmis, jnanis, and yogis cannot be bound in devotional service. Karmis fully engage in the activities of the body. Their aim of life is to give comfort to the body only. Jnanis try to get out of entanglement by philosophical speculation, but they have no standing in the liberated position. Because they do not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down from the exalted position of Brahman realization. Yogis also have a bodily concept of life. They think that they can achieve something spiritual by exercising the body through dharana, asana, pranayama, etc. A devotee's position is always transcendental because of his intimate relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, to remain always aloof from the actions and reactions of the body and engage in one's real occupation, namely rendering service to the Lord, can be possible only for devotees. Vinasyasya gunat prabaho, dravya kriya karaka chetanatmana, Drishtasu sampatsu vipatsu surayo na vikriyante mai bhadasolita. Lord Vishnu told King Prithu, "My dear king, the constant change of this material world is due to the interaction of the three modes of material nature. The five elements, the senses, the demigods who control the senses, as well as the mind, which is agitated by the spirit soul, all these taken together comprise the body. Since the spirit soul is completely different from this combination of gross and subtle material elements, my devotee who is connected with me in intense friendship and affection, being completely in knowledge, is never agitated by material happiness and distress." Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Praskritya Deshitarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srimasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Panchakalpita Rupya Stakripa Sindhu Vyevacha Paritana Bhavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namonga. So, yes, this is all discussion about how in different ways to become independent of the actions and reactions of life. Within this material world, all the different happenings, situations, people and what they do and how these things apparently implicate us or impact on our lives. The basic idea here, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is explaining to King Prithu. Basic idea is, we have to become detached. Renounced, unaffected by these things, and in this way come to the spiritual platform and remain on the spiritual platform and ultimately become completely and permanently liberated from all these material things. So of course this is very important instruction. It's particularly important for King Prithu at this point because he had been caught in a particular type of material situation. In principle, it is a very typical type of material situation that everybody gets caught in sometime or another, or from time to time even. Even quite regularly, that we have our plans. As Srila Prabhupada said once, "I have my plan, you have your plan, and Krishna has his plan." So, of course, we can understand which plan will normally win through, and it may not always be our plan. Despite the fact that at least on the material level people are very keen for that. They're extremely concerned, enthusiastic, and even they become very dependent upon my plan coming through and things going my way. But it doesn't always work like that. And this is what has happened to King Prithu. He was in the process of performing 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. Ashwamedha sacrifice means the biggest, most significant, most powerful, and just the most important of all Karmakandiya activities. there are so many different types of fruitive activities prescribed in the Vedic literatures. And the eighth offense in the chanting of the holy names is that we must not think that the chanting of Hare Krishna is one of them, just another materialistic, ritualistic, religious activity. The chanting of Hare Krishna and the Krishna consciousness in general is in a completely different realm, completely on the spiritual platform. And we should not think that it is just another way to make material progress. So, of all those different ways to make material progress, all those karma kandya activities described in the Vedic literatures, particularly in the four Vedas. So of all of them, the Ashwamedha sacrifice is the biggest. It is the king of all material religious activities. So there was King Prithu in the process of doing 100 of these. To do one nowadays would be such a challenge. It would be beyond practically anyone in terms of just the grandeur and the requirements. Even someone like Bill Gates or whoever may be the wealthiest person on this planet these days, if he had to do a real Ashwamedha sacrifice just to get the different ingredients required for that, that would probably bankrupt him a few times over. And what to speak of finding some suitable Brahmins who could actually then carry it out, that would be another insurmountable problem. So King Prithu, he was in the process of doing 100. Actually, he had done 99. And the thing is, with Ashwamedha sacrifices, that if you do 100, you can become Lord Indra. If you manage 100, you can become Lord Indra. So Lord Indra was concerned. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to be kicked out or somehow or other edged out and lose my position? So what happened was, King Prithu, right in the middle of doing the 100th Ashwamedha sacrifice — Ashva means horse sacrifice — right in the middle, they were actually doing it. King Indra came and stole the horse. And of course, you can't do a horse sacrifice without a horse, so that was a big problem. And therefore, one of King Prithu's sons responded very strongly, and he went and intercepted Indra. And actually, he was going to punish him, chastise him in some way, and take back the horse. But then the Supreme Personality of Godhead intervened. No, just let him go. Just leave it at 99. Just leave it at 99. That's enough. And understand that this Indra, that it is too much for him to digest and just deal with and accept, that someone else may be able to assume my position. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he intervened in that way. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Actually, for you, it's not important. Because you, after all, King Prithu is Shaktyadesh avatar. He is empowered with the, Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam, Dushta Shakti. Dushta Shakti means that particular Shakti of the Lord which is there for subduing like criminals, demoniac people, just dealing with wrongdoers and smashing these people. So you don't need to do it to do the 100. And this Indra, even though he is a devotee, because he is a devotee, but because he's not a pure devotee, he's a mixed devotee, his mixture is such that if you push him too far on this material side in regards to his position, prestige, etc., and just the general material benefit of being Indra, if you push him too far, he may snap, he may break. Even though he's a devotee, and you could say, well, you know, you want me to be renounced, why can't he be renounced too? But his position in Krishna consciousness is such that he has a breaking point. And if you push him beyond his breaking point, then everything will go upside, well, his life will go upside down. And because he has such an important role in the management of the universe, which ultimately means he has such an important service in Krishna consciousness, if he becomes too disturbed and just cannot function any further, then the implications for the functioning of the universe from the point of view of Krishna consciousness will be very detrimental even in that sense. So just let him go. Let the whole thing go. And don't push him too far. Even though you can say, well, it's just a material attachment and he's meant to be a devotee and devotees aren't to be meant to be materially attached. So why not push him? Just keep pushing him. But that was not the idea of Lord Vishnu. So here now, Lord Vishnu is preaching to King Prithu that you should also be detached. Don't worry that you are not able to perform the 100 horse sacrifices. And this is how you can do it. Through knowledge culminating in pure devotional service. The point is made in the verse Lord Vishnu mentions that you should be, a devotee should be completely in knowledge. But what that leads to and what everything leads to in Krishna consciousness, your knowledge, your renunciation, your whatever skills you may have which you could use, what everything culminates in is your actual service to the Lord. What you actually do to please the Lord. That activity of devotional service, that expression of devotion, of love, manifests in the form of service. This is really sort of like the product, the end result, the goal. This is what it all culminates in. Not simply to be renounced, as he's encouraging King Prithu, not simply to be knowledgeable that yes, well, I'm spirit, soul, this is the material world, and therefore I shouldn't be interested in anything material. But the end is to please the Lord through rendering service. And that is the culmination. that is really the form, the manifest form of your success in cultivating knowledge, in any renunciation, in anything. The manifest form is how you have done various things which have actually pleased the Lord. Srila Prabhupada, in one class on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, in those two verses, and actually the following several verses, in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is describing to Arjuna different personal qualities, different features of character, really, which Krishna says, if you are like this, if you are like that, if you do like this, if you do like that, then you will be very dear to me. And he mentions also, if you're renounced, if you're equipoised and friendly to all living entities, and there's numerous different personal qualities that the Lord mentions there. And if you develop these things, if you are like this, then you'll become very dear to me. So Srila Prabhupada, in giving a class on the first two of that series of verses, verses 13 and 14, Srila Prabhupada begins the class by saying, yes, this is Krishna consciousness. How will Krishna love me? How will Krishna love me? So, just in terms of renunciation or even knowledge, but particularly renunciation is being stressed here, don't be too attached, then if one is simply renounced and somehow able to do without this and do without that and do without so many things which so many people feel they cannot do without, people on the material level, just simply being renounced as such, like a rock, whatever you offer to a rock won't accept it, can't accept it, pour water on the rock, it just runs off, try and squeeze some food into the rock. So if you become like a rock, and just so, you can't be touched really. Certainly you can't be influenced by anything material. How would that make you lovable by some other person? So Srila Prabhupada makes this point. How Krishna consciousness, what is it? It is a question of how will Krishna love me? How will I become such a person, so attractive to Krishna? Then Krishna, when he sees me, Krishna will say, aha, there he is. He's the one I want. That face in the otherwise faceless crowd. And Krishna says, there he is. That's the one. That's my man. I'm taking him. So just becoming impervious like a stone isn't really going to help you. So actually what one has to do is render devotional service. And that devotional renunciation, that freedom, even you can say, that liberation from any type of material attraction, any type of material influence, that liberation comes in the wake of devotional service. Certain devotional service does not come in the wake of simply being renounced. it actually has nothing to do with things. If you think about it, it really has nothing to do with it at all. Simply renunciation as such, in and of itself, alone. But a real Krishna conscious renunciation, that renunciation manifests in the wake of one's devotional service. We were discussing a couple of days ago about Mother Sita, wife of Lord Ram. When Lord Ram was banished to the forest by King Dasarath, his father, so he was preparing to leave, he went and spoke to Sita and said, "Well, I'll see you after some time. I'll see you after some years." And Sita said, "No, I'm coming with you." So there's some debate and little argument between them. "You can't come into the forest. I have to come with you. You're my husband." And it goes on and on. It's quite a discussion between the two of them. And my point in this particular respect is that Mother Sita eventually tells Lord Ram that, why do you not want me to come? What is my fault that you're saying I am not allowed to come? What have I done so you would reject me like that? I'm your faithful wife." And she makes the point, which is our point here. She says, "I have not even mentally, I've never looked at another man. I've never even mentally looked at another man. So what is my fault that you would reject me?" In other words, what she's saying is, she is completely renounced. She is on the platform of total detachment from the material point of view. And what is the basis of that? What is that detachment a manifestation of? It is a manifestation of her love for Lord Ram. Not that she's just some very strong woman who just somehow has lost any interest in men, or something along those lines. But it is simply and wholly and solely a manifestation of her love for Lord Ram. That is what it is. So in Krishna consciousness, whatever renunciation may be there in the life, particularly of a very advanced devotee, and ultimately of any devotee, whatever renunciation is there, detachment from material existence, it is only there because the devotee loves the Lord. And loving the Lord, being so much absorbed in that loving relationship with the Lord, the devotee just has no time for anything else. Just no interest. It is not a question of renunciation as such, somehow or other forcing oneself to give up something which otherwise one would really prefer to have. So this is the situation in Krishna consciousness. Through absorption in devotional service, through actually loving the Lord, and even to the degree that one is able to develop love for the Lord, then one becomes free from other things, the non-Krishna conscious things. And Srila Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, make the point in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, karma, or rather, jnana, and vairagya are only useful in the very beginning stages of devotional service. Beyond the very beginning stages, as actual, like specific elements to be focused on in any way, jnana and vairagya, they have no place. They have no place at all. Because the devotee is attached to Krishna, and therefore the detachment and knowledge, realization of the distinction between spirit and matter, they're just like, they're given things, just assumed to be there, because the devotee is so absorbed in devotional service. So therefore it is expressed also by Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Prabhupada explains that mukti, sense gratification, and mukti. In the early stages, the devotee is trying to make progress and chant nicely and not get distracted by material things and so on like that. Whereas bhukti and mukti, even they're expressed in the sense of being like persons, bhukti and mukti, bhukti devi and mukti devi, they're doing their best. Come on. You can enjoy this, or somehow trying to attract one. Like, for example, oh, your devotional service is so difficult. You have to organize so many devotees, and sometimes they don't want to be organized. And it is a struggle for you to deal with them sometimes. You would be better off with some easier devotional service, so you don't have to deal with these sometimes cranky devotees, or distributing books to these people who don't want them. You would be better off just go and chant Hare Krishna to the cows in the Goshala, and that would be very nice. But if your devotional service is something else to manage or to distribute Krishna consciousness to the non-devotees, particularly the Westerners, then that would be a distraction. So just go chant Hare Krishna to the cows and give up your prescribed service. It would really be a distraction, actually. So in other words, it would be mukti devi in the guise of Krishna consciousness trying to attract you. But then Rupa Goswami makes the point that when the devotee becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, then mukti devi, they come offer their obeisances to the devotee. Of the two of them, ultimately mukti devi is the most dangerous or most powerful. Because even as a person progresses in Krishna consciousness and becomes free or progressively free from material attraction, still the possibility of becoming attracted to liberation may be there. But when the devotee comes to the level of pure devotional service, then even mukti devi, the personality of liberation, she comes and offers her obeisances to the devotee. And the devotee, of course, says, no, please go away. Go find someone else. Don't bother me any longer. But mukti devi says, no, you are such an advanced devotee. Now, for my benefit, I want to get your association, so please don't reject me. In other words, the devotee, through pure devotional service, becomes completely beyond liberation, and liberation becomes like a maidservant of the pure devotee, coming with folded hands and appreciating the value of the association of the pure devotee. So therefore, we, in our humble efforts in Krishna consciousness, we should try to understand this point, try to really take it into our hearts, that the main thing is to cultivate our attachment for Krishna. And ultimately, the main thing is to really try to please Krishna. Srila Prabhupada made the point that when he read Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport to Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 verse 41, Vyavasayataka Buddhir Ekeha Kuru Nandana, how the devotees are one, just completely one-pointed and totally focused in their determination, focused on Krishna in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada said when he read Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport to that verse, Prabhupada said it really struck him very deeply, because Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur particularly emphasized that what does it mean to become so one-pointed in Krishna consciousness, in devotional service? It means to become one-pointed on the instructions of the spiritual master and on rendering one's service to one's spiritual master. And other considerations like my own spiritual progress, or how I'm becoming like this or like that, developing certain qualities. These are all secondary considerations. The prime consideration, primary consideration is, am I pleasing my spiritual master? Am I actually following his instructions? Is this what I am doing? Is it actually happening that he's becoming pleased? Which ultimately means, as Prabhupada said, as we mentioned in that class on the verses in the 12th chapter, and it is Krishna developing love for me? Am I making such an impression on Krishna's heart that he is becoming attracted to me? So this is the essence of devotional service. And when one develops Krishna consciousness in this way, then all these other qualities, they become like the shadow of the devotee. They become like the shadow. Shadow is always there. No matter how fast you run, you cannot outrun your shadow. It will always be there. As soon as you turn around, it'll be right there. But still, the shadow, even though it looks like you and you cannot really separate it from you, but certainly it's not you. You are you. And that what you are is really the important thing. So all these things, secondary qualities, jnana, knowledge, vairagya, all these things, they become like the shadow of the devotee. On the basis of the substance of the devotee's devotional service. And in that sense, then even a kingdom like that of Lord Indra, which is more or less the kingdom of the entire universe, or anything that could be acquired, even we sing in the Dhamma Dharastikam, and the translation is there, things that may be acquired through following the 9 processes of devotional service. When you render devotional service, even though it is, or at least should be, spiritual, but other things may come too. In the wake of one's devotional service. So, the real substance is one's devotional service. And other things, the devotee comes to the point, even a kingdom like the whole universe, well, if I can't use it in Krishna consciousness, I don't need it at all. Let me just render my devotional service. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question from anyone? Maharaj. I don't know if we have a microphone, do we? Maybe just shout.
There was one devotee who was in charge of the guest house. He told me one time Prabhupada was giving a class and some Jada yogis came, maybe 5 or 6 of them, from Vrindavan. Jada means like stone. They're saying that they sit in the rain, they don't cut their hair, people, you know, spit on them. And so then Prabhupada started talking.
One time.
One devotee was manager of the guest house. He told me that one time Prabhupada was giving a lecture here, and many people were coming in and out. So about 5 or 6 Jada yogis came in, some ashram in Vrindavan, their hair untouched, dust on their bodies, wearing rags in the street. And they sit in the sun, they sit in the rain, they take whatever food they can find. So he said, Prabhupada started talking about Yukta Vairagya, using every pronunciation, he used to use everything for Krishna. And they would listen. And then after the class, of course, you know, when Prabhupada was here, there would be the Saprasada, the Guru. So Prabhupada finished the whole lecture and he said, so, you can become free from the exploitation of material nature by tolerating heat and cold, honor and dishonor. But personally, I plan to go back home, back to Godhead, by taking sweet balls.
Jai, thank you. Prabhupada, another time, one devotee was telling Prabhupada how we shouldn't eat too much and be very careful, you know, dietary considerations and all that. And Prabhupada had some bowl of sweet balls. And Prabhupada was in the mood of like, yes, well, Prabhupada took one sweet ball and said, we will eat our way back to Godhead. So, someone else is bringing.
Hare Krishna. I have 2 questions. One question is that what kind of benefit the Mayavadis can get by chanting Hare Krishna? And second thing is that chanting Hare Krishna destroys the karma. So why it is that at the time of initiation that the Guru accepts the karma of the disciple? Because it is understood that the person is chanting Hare Krishna for some time. So why is it so that the karma is there?
Of course, those are sort of big subjects, but the Mayavadis, their chanting is discussed in Harinam Chintamani at some length. Their chanting, at best, is Namabas, at best. It may also very well be Namaparad. So it just depends on sort of the degree of their Mayavad and, you know, considerations like that. But if they're not so much like the offensive Mayavadis, then maybe in the next life they may become devotees. You know, nowadays you don't really get many real Mayavadis, like real Shankarites. As far as I know, even the Shankaracharyas are not, you know, real Mayavadis. Nowadays, they're kind of, you know, modern age higher values. So, yeah, it depends like that. If they can appreciate Krishna consciousness, like even the, well, he passed away, but the Shankaracharya of Kanchi, the previous one, he was very old. He appreciated Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So, that's good. Of course, there were some other problems he had. You know, he was trying to be some sort of higher body. But maybe in his next life, maybe he'll become a devotee. And then, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, yes, well, it's one of the offenses to think that the glories of chanting Hare Krishna, no matter how potent it is, that they may be exaggerations or misunderstandings like that. So that's there, that's a fact. Srila Prabhupada explains there's an extensive purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita to a verse in which Lord Chaitanya himself says, all you have to do is chant Hare Krishna. Thus, Srila Prabhupada gives an extensive purport to the effect that, and you can locate it, it's I think in the Madhya Lila somewhere, to the effect that, yes, this is true. Of course it's true. If you chant without offences. So then Srila Prabhupada makes the point that people who are coming to us now, for them to just chant Hare Krishna without offences, just like that, well, it's hardly possible. At least we don't really meet people who really seem to be doing that. And Prabhupada explains there that generally, in order for people to come to that point where they can really chant Hare Krishna in that way, then they have to do deity worship, or they have to be initiated, they have to accept a spiritual master, be trained by a spiritual master, and progress. Then they can come to that point. But otherwise, you just tell someone, they walk in, I want to become a devotee, okay, now you chant Hare Krishna, that's it. In a little while, that person will deviate. He'll deviate. Because to come to that point of really chanting Hare Krishna as it needs to be chanted, you need to be trained, you need a lot of mercy. And Prabhupada mentions there you should do deity worship also. Yeah. So it's like that. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj,
Hare Krishna.
My obeisance to you. To achieve material, achieve the material objects like becoming the Lord Indra's post, have you to do only karma kanda activities like sacrifice, ashtamik sacrifice? Or is it possible that if you do devotional service, achieve something like that?
Would you like to? Are you thinking of another approach? Well, that is one way. The thing is, it is not that the only way to become Lord Indra is to do 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. It is not that that is the only way. Sometimes a devotee becomes Lord Indra. Sometimes a devotee becomes, well, like for example, Lord Brahma. Lord Shiva explains in the fourth canto that you do 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices, you become Lord Indra. If you do more, well, actually no, he says, if you are celibate, you maintain brahmacharya for 100 lifetimes perfectly. He says, you can become Lord Brahma. And then he says, if you do something else, I forget exactly what else it is. This is Lord Shiva speaking. He says, you can become me. In other words, you can become a Shaktivish form of Lord Shiva. So there are different ways of getting different positions. And sometimes, if it's the will of the Lord, then a devotee can become Lord Indra. Or even if a devotee, you know, they're a devotee, but they have some material desire which, you know, somehow it's still there. So they may be given the position of Indra to fulfill that desire. Like Karadama Muni, he was such an advanced devotee. The Lord appeared in front of him and spoke to him face to face. He hasn't done that with any of us yet. And wait a second. He said, okay, what do you want? And you know what Karadama said? A wife. So you might think, you know, you're such a devotee. The Lord appeared in front of you. What do you need a wife for? But he understood, at least he felt, that, you know, I need to go through this. Despite the fact, you know, he was really a serious devotee, but he had to go through, you know, a very specialized form of Grihastha Ashrama. But still it was Grihastha Ashrama. So sometimes even devotees have to go through such things.
Maharaj Lord, Guru Maharaj got a planet because of the materialistic benefit.
That was just the Lord. That was not really, you know, meant to please Dhruva. That, wow, I'm getting a heavenly planet. Hey, that's good. Not really. The Lord wanted him to rule there. He wanted him to rule there. So, you know, sometimes a devotee, they may, on the way back to Godhead, stop off here or there, some heavenly planet for a little while, by the Lord's arrangement. But it's not really, you know, necessarily a reflection that they have material desires. It's just some reciprocation from the Lord in a certain sense. Like Prahlad, Lord Nrsingadev said to Prahlad, ask me for something. And he didn't, the Lord did not mean, ask me to help you chant 16 rounds a day without offenses. He meant, ask me for something material. And Dhruva refused, politely. He refused. And the Lord said, no, I want to give you something, so you please ask. And Prahlad tried to somehow or other avoid it, but the Lord insisted. So in the end, of course, Prahlad, being extremely intelligent, he said, yes, my desire is, please deliver my father from hell. That's my desire. But sometimes the Lord offers a devotee something material. Even though a devotee actually doesn't want it, in the case of Prahlad, he had no interest. Because he was so deeply absorbed in his loving relationship with the Lord, it was just like foolishness, practically. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.